Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Synchronicity, or meaningful coincidence, has been something that philosophers and scientists have wondered about for decades. Most of us have experienced it at least once in our lives. One very common example is when you find yourself thinking about someone you haven't seen or thought of in a long time. Then out of the blue, that same person suddenly calls or emails you. Is this just chance? Did your thoughts somehow trigger a similar thought in your old friend? Can two events like this be related in a meaningful way without one causing the other? And if so, what does this tell us about the cosmos? And is it possible that you can learn to make choices that actively encourage synchronicity in your life? Skye Nelson Isaacs is a theoretical physicist, speaker, author, and a musician. He has a master's degree in physics from San Francisco State University, with a thesis in string theory and a BS in physics from UC Berkeley. In his book, Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World, he turns to quantum mechanics to seek answers to long-standing questions about synchronicity. Skye Nelson Isaacs joins me now to discuss his provocative new hypothesis that the cosmos may be designed to bring us meaningful, synchronistic experiences in responses to the choice we make, and how living in flow can not only help us address some of the pressing political and social problems we face, but also help us deepen our relationships and lead more purposeful, fulfilled lives. Skye Nelson Isaacs, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. It's very nice to be on the show. I appreciate you having me.
Skye, your bio says that you've dedicated your life to finding your own sense of purpose, beginning as a student of the yogic master Sri Swami Satchidananda when you were less than 5 years old. And your writing on topics like flow comes from integrating that experience into your life. I have to ask you, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who has, how does a preschooler become a student of a yogic master? And indeed, why would a five-year-old even want to?
By exposure, really. I grew up in a pretty normal lifestyle by some standards, but my parents, my stepfather and my mother were devotees of Sri Swami Satchidananda, so we were immersed in the teachings from a very early age, my four brothers and sisters and I, and we attended many events with Satchidananda and at the Integral Yoga Institute in San Francisco, and I spent at least one summer at the Yogaville in Virginia, where he built an ashram. So I was really immersed in the teachings early on and just surrounded by it. You know, it wasn't like I studied it intentionally, but it was not a big leap for me in high school to start studying the Tao Te Ching and the Bhagavad Gita and the poetry of Rumi and the mystical traditions of Christianity through Brother David Stendhal Ross, and just a real interest in understanding what the cosmos is, why I'm here, what is the experience I'm having, and why is the world so at odds with making any sense in a way. Satchidananda's message was very practical and yet very hard to understand unless you just dove in and try to live it. So I really got a taste for marrying my analytical self with my heart and body expression. And I think that was due to his teachings.
So what sort of experiences did you have that sparked off this fascination with synchronicity and flow?
It was in my 20s that I began to connect the dots. I had had certainly plenty of experiences of coincidence as a kid and as a high schooler, some altered states where I saw deeper into the nature of reality than I had ever seen before and saw things from a different perspective. And so I saw that as like a spiritual life, right? There's something about God in there that I can strive to understand and get closer to God. And a lot of traditions talk about the power of the divine. And yet there was a way in which these experiences were very, in my 20s, I began to see that there was like a pattern that wasn't arbitrary. So I'll tell you a big story of synchronicity that happened to me when I was 20. And at the time, I didn't think of it as like a transition point or a turning point for me. But looking back, it was powerful. I was traveling through Europe on a semester off of college, and my friend, who I'd known since high school, Dana, was also traveling. She was in Israel for a semester. And we just made kind of a joking plan to meet in Greece because it was kind of halfway in between where she was going to be and where I was going to be. But we didn't have cell phones in the 90s, and I thought we'd try and make it happen, but we didn't have any solid plan. Well, as it turns out, I wasn't able to call her for at least a month into my travels. And by the time I was on my way towards Greece, I was traveling through Rome, and I got really sick, and I had to head home. So I changed my ticket, really, really bummed. I changed my plane ticket to be out of Paris in about 3 days and got on a train up to Paris to fly home to California. Meanwhile, she got really tired of waiting for me, and her friends invited her to go to Paris for Fashion Week, which is only like a two-hour flight from where she was. So at first she said no, but then she decided to go along with it. Because she didn't know if I'd call. She thought I might call while she was gone, and she didn't want to miss the call. But she decided to go on the trip. And I'm walking through the Louvre Museum in the one day that I had in Paris before my flight. And I'm walking through the Louvre, and the biggest museum in the world, and I walk into this room, and I see this person that looks just like Dana. And I'm flabbergasted because it can't be Dana, but it seems to be. And her friend looks at her and says, "There's this really weird guy staring at you." And so she looks over, and she acknowledges. She says, "That's Sky." And I give her credit for that because I didn't look that good. I was travel-worn and ill. So that was the beginning of – well, that was a continuation of a very deep friendship that we had had. And about 10 years later, we were married, and we have a 10-year-old daughter now.
Wow.
So this is a moment that I can point to that was very much like – it was like the divine was acting in our lives, but there was also an element of real purpose to it that came from me and from her.
Hmm. Okay, let me ask you this. I watched the movie Rocket Man last night, a brilliant musical about Elton John. And there's a scene in the movie where Elton is pitching himself to the person who became his first manager. And he tells the guy that he sings, plays the piano, writes music, but he can't write lyrics. And the manager shuffles a pile of song sheets submitted by would-be lyricists, pulls some out at random, tosses them to Elton and says, "Go away and come up with some music." And that piece of music, the lyrics that he was given were written by Bernie Taupin. Now, that's a classic case of what we may call synchronicity. But some people might say, just like you and your wife, that's not synchronicity, that's destiny.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to form a strong difference between synchronicity and destiny because I don't know. I think that destiny is a mystery to us, and there's ways in which synchronicity shows up in our lives to bring us to our destined outcome just when we thought we had totally missed the boat. So, you know, synchronicity works in the following way, just to really summarize it. I think that the tools of quantum mechanics tell us, this is part of the work that I'm doing to publish and to develop, is that quantum mechanical principles apply to all things. They're universal. And what that means is that what you're observing around you right now, you have definite access to. It's definitely happening a certain way. But everything you're not observing is undetermined, is in a superposition of multiple possibilities. And so when you have when you interact with someone or the manager pulls the piece of paper out from that stack and that it happens to be a song that ultimately is destined to become what it became by Bernie Taupin and Elton John, that is a that paper can be in so many different locations in that stack of paper. It has a whole history of its own that led it to be where it was when the manager reached in and pulled it out. And so we look at this process that I call retroactive event determination. Retroactive means the whole history of the thing is in question, of the paper in that stack. And event determination means that that particular event of him pulling that piece of paper makes it necessary for that piece of paper to be where it was at that moment, which allows the entire history of that paper to fall into place to be there. And this is the principle that underlies how the universe can respond to us and the choices we make and bring us what seem to be destined experiences, and yet we still have the free will choice to do whatever we so choose.
You know, I found myself having to stop and think a lot reading your book. you know, over and over again, I'm not entirely sure that I grasped it all. And it felt to me at times as if you were saying one thing and then contradicting yourself. This whole question about, you know, flow, synchronicity, destiny, etc. You talk a lot about the fact that, you know, many people say that we create our own reality, and you say we don't. And yet, over and again, I see evidence that we are creating our reality. If we are participating, if we are making a choice, regardless of what prompts us to make that choice, we are creating our own reality.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I really take issue with the words, though. I mean, that's all I'm getting at. I'm very precise with the language because I think it's important. What this particular theory implies is that we are influencing the probabilities of events in our lives, of seemingly unrelated events that show up in our lives because we've influenced the probabilities for them to do so. It doesn't mean that we are creating that experience in a direct way. I think people often take that very literal, like everything that happens, they've created. So I'm trying to pull back a little bit from that and still maintain the sense that we are influencing the nature of the experiences that show up in our lives. In that sense, we are definitely creating our reality.
Okay, so tell me about flow, living in flow, going with the flow. What's the difference and why does it matter? Because I have a question related to that.
Yeah. Well, I see synchronicities showing up in our life as a means of getting into flow. Synchronicities are often unexpected events that show up. And if we can see them in the context of the greater picture of our lives, like I have this process called the Lorax, to listen, open, and reflect on life circumstances. So you can see, where does this fit into my life, and then release attachments to how I thought things were going to go, because I'm surprised by this thing, and then take action from there and repeat that process over and over. And when we can do that and make use of the surprises in our life, I think we can get into flow, the experience of being in alignment with circumstances and finding that circumstances also align with us. But it doesn't mean just going with the flow, because we're not just surrendering. There's this really important piece about action, making choices.
Okay, but surely if we are in flow, if we're living in flow, then is it not possible that we are tapping into something? You know, I'm thinking about Rupert Sheldrake's work.
Yeah.
And in particular, something like dogs who know when their owner's coming home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is it not possible that when we are in a state of flow, this, we're all supposed to be one. We're all supposed to have access to each other, that somehow those gates are open and we can respond.
Yeah, I think of synchronicity as paving the way for synchronistic gateways, that we are, when we are in flow, we're naturally responding to the things that are sent to us in ways that are wholesome and constructive. And when we can get into that very natural state of responsiveness, and what that means is like getting rid of some of the defensiveness we might feel at times, or the self-criticism, because those things cause us to do things that are maybe more out of flow, like not take someone up on an opportunity that might be good for us. So when we can do like the dogs do and follow our instincts in that way, there's a very naturalness to it that I think unfolds things in the optimal way, not only for ourselves, but also for the people that we're with and our environment.
Okay. So you talk about, you wrote at one point that you've read discussions of synchronicity that take the notion too far, in that they talk about the beneficence of the universe. Why do you say that that is too far, and where do you stand on that? Because it sounds to me as though you and I are not so far apart as I had thought reading the book, and yet at the same time you're saying that that's too far. Why is it too far?
Well, I like to be realistic and make sure people feel like synchronicity and the theory about it can reflect their experience. Not everything that happens makes us feel good. And synchronicity, I think, is a path towards healing and growth. But sometimes that involves a descent into difficult woundings from the past that we can work through. And that's a big part of what I try and convey in my writing.
Right. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest today is theoretical physicist, speaker, musician, and author Sky Nelson Isaacs. And we're talking about his book, Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World. We'll be back with more on the physics of synchronicity and living in flow after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramala Mitten, and we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Sky Nelson Isaacs, at the heart of your approach to synchronicity lies the question, how is it that events can be meaningfully related, even though one doesn't cause the other? How do we know that one doesn't cause the other?
Well, the synchronicity, the way that I use the word, and it's not the only way to use the word, but I just try and find one particular approach that I can tease apart and learn something about. A synchronicity is a meaningful connection, and it's usually a meaningful connection because it leads to something that we want to experience. So the way that I see this is that we – anticipate experiences that we want to have or don't want to have. That's what we're doing in our bodies all the time. We're feeling into the future in a way. And when we do that, we interact with this branching tree of possibilities. And this branching tree of all the different ways our world can evolve, all the choices we can make and all the different people that come our way or different possibilities. And these are, you know, the different versions of our destiny. And when we do that and we have an anticipation of some of those over others, we don't even mean to, but we want to have certain experiences in life and we anticipate those, we're actually growing apples on some of those branches. And so a synchronicity is an event which seems surprising to us often, but it is leads to some branch of the tree that has a lot of apples on it. And because it leads to all these apples, all these experiences that I want to have, they weigh down that branch and that branch becomes more likely. So that's a model of how a surprising synchronistic experience can become more likely because it leads to some experience that I am seeking to have. Now, it's not in this way to answer your question, it's not that there's a direct connection between, you know, I want to talk to my friend about a vacation we're going to go on, but I can't reach him or her. And then I go to the store and I bump into her. Like, I didn't cause her to show up at the store at that moment. But that happening leads to the outcome where we get to talk about the vacation. And so there's this, it's not causal in that way, but it does connect to a meaningful thing that I wanted to have happen.
You've spent 2 decades seriously analyzing experiences of synchronicity. You say that you're interested in everyday examples, not weird ones. Why aren't you interested in the weird ones? Aren't they the most compelling?
Well, I think they can be, and we can get I think the story of me meeting my wife in Paris by accident, my future wife, was compelling because it's so amazing and so surprising, but it only happened once in my life. So I'm looking at event. Yeah.
Well, what do you call weird? Do you not call that particular one weird?
I do. Because it was so out of the box and amazing. I mean, we were supposed to meet in Greece. She was in Israel and I was in Italy. And then we ended up accidentally bumping each other in Paris. What I think it becomes really powerful is when we apply those insights to everyday experiences so that we are aware every day of the little ways in which synchronicity is showing up and providing stepping stones or breadcrumbs for us to follow to re-empower us to ignite our life with purpose and go for something that we really care about, to find passion in our lives, the capacity to change our lives and also change the world by changing our lives. And I think that happens from the little steps that we take along the way, and those are facilitated by the little events in life that show up. I can give an example of that if you'd like.
Yeah, please do.
So I was at a store shopping with my daughter maybe 4 years ago, and I had had this dream a few months prior to write something powerful that made a difference. And so I had been trying to write something powerful that made a difference, but any writer out there knows it can be difficult when you're trying to write something powerful that makes a difference. It doesn't necessarily come out that way. And then I found myself at the grocery store one day shopping for groceries, and in the checkout line I noticed a magazine on the rack that actually had a very disturbing image that was politically related, and it was essentially hate speech on the cover of the magazine. And in that moment, it was just a very small moment, but I found myself unable to concentrate. And so I paid for my groceries, and my daughter was with me, and I'm trying to track her and track my groceries and track my wallet, but I can't really concentrate because I'm thinking about this thing I just saw. And I realized I couldn't leave the store. I had to talk to the manager. And so I waited for about 10 minutes to talk to the manager, and I grabbed hold of this moment and said, this is important to me. I got to do something. And I came to the manager and I said, look, this is not your fault, but I think this is inappropriate to have on the shelves here. And I find it disturbing and I'd like to know what we can do. And he said, well, if that's the way you feel, we'll pull it off the shelves. And he took that article off every shelf. And it was very empowering for me to realize that by stepping up in that unexpected moment, I could make this difference. And so then I went and I wrote this down when I got home, and I realized I could write it up, and I published it online, and it became an article that made a lot of difference and went viral. And fit into that narrative that I was trying to get to in my dream life. And this is just a little moment in the day that I would have missed if I hadn't have been paying attention to it.
Hmm. Well, tell me about the process that you've developed, which you claim can actually help us cultivate flow.
Yeah, this process I call the Lorax process, L-O-R-R-A-X. And it starts with listening. It's very important, or it's very useful, to notice and listen to the small events in life, or the big ones, the surprising things, the obstacles that show up in life. I have an experience one time with my car breaking down right before I was about to give a workshop. And by listening to that experience, or by listening to walking through the grocery store and noticing this article on the wall that I was disturbed by, I was able to stop for a moment and pause and notice what was happening around me, notice how I felt inside, if there was something I felt I needed to do here. And then from that listening, once I've paused, I have the space to open my mind. Okay, I was planning to do something, but now I've got to stop and pay attention to this obstacle that's in my way or this opportunity that showed up. I open my mind, and then I want to reflect on what's going on so I can form a connection or see if there's a connection to any of the goals that I have in my life right now, any of the things that I'm working towards or thinking about. So in the case with the article on the magazine, by reflecting, I realized that this is something I really care about. I care about speaking up in public venues when it's important, when there's something to be said that can make a difference and help people. And I felt that this was one of those cases to remove the hate speech from our community. In the case with the broken down car, I before the workshop, I ended up finding that that was useful for me because it made me connect with people in the workshop more. Because I stepped out of my car and started asking for help. And in asking for help, I started forming bonds with the people there, so that I ended up feeling more connected. And so looking for the ways in which we can reflect on how a synchronistic obstacle is actually helping us get to one of our goals. And then from there, often we need to release something. Like I had to release my attachment to leaving the grocery store right away because I was ready to go home. But I felt I needed to deal with this magazine. And so releasing my attachment to how things were going to go, releasing my attachment to, you know, not having any obstacles. And once I've done those steps to listen, open, reflect, and release, then I'm in a position where it's important to take action, to show up in the world and do something with my wisdom right now that I've gained. And then, so we're balancing the listening process and reflecting process with an action element, doing something in the world. And then from there, we've completed a cycle that we now want to repeat and not ever give up on the process that we're aiming towards. And so by following this, listen, open, reflect, release, act, and repeat, or don't give up, we end up getting into the flow with whatever comes our way, being able to navigate any circumstances and see where they might be helping us or leading us that we might not have seen before.
So listen, open, reflect. You know, that seems to me as though, you know, the more present we are, the more we put our focus on something, the more likely it is that something will happen. Is that correct? I mean, when you think about scientists say, you know, that nothing exists until you put your focus on it or your attention on it.
Right.
We are then participating in the creation of whatever it is, you know, that we describe as synchronistic.
And I think every moment is pregnant with possibilities, things that, like, we're in the grocery store in line and we don't know what we have in common with the people next to us, or we're on the subway and we don't know what will happen if we get off at a different stop and who we might run into or what stores we might discover, or it's this big mystery. And so living in flow is about stepping fully into life and being able to be open. It's like we can't come into connection. When we're in flow, we have to be ready to deal with whatever's actually there and not have a preconceived notion about how things are going to go. And for me, that's really opened me up to being more in relationship with people and be more vulnerable with people. Because I don't ever, can't ever predict what someone's going to say or who's going to show up in my life at any given moment. And to be available to that requires me being more authentic and more forthcoming and more welcoming in my life.
I can see how that really enriches one's life, you know, because, I mean, if we go around with a closed mind, you know, we cut off so many possibilities. If we adopt what, you know, you're talking about, then, yeah, we remain open to just about everything.
Yeah, and I think so. And it can be tricky. You know, I think the word maybe is really helpful because some people are already really open to everything. And for them, it's more a matter of different steps in the process become harder to do. So for some people, it's easier to take action and harder to reflect and harder to listen. For other people, they're very good at listening, very good at noticing what comes along in their life, but maybe not as good at having their own insight and taking action for themselves, choosing for themselves. So I think this process is very balanced, and each person is going to have a different strength and a different weakness in the process. But I do think it leads overall to a way of being which is harmonious for us, and I think can lead to beneficial circumstances if we navigate it properly. And also, it's not just for us. When we're in flow, by paying attention to the synchronicities in our life, we, I think, also serve others really well. And there's this way in which flow navigates really complex situations in a way that benefits everybody involved and doesn't create problems down the road because we solve one problem by creating a new problem. In flow, I think we can solve the problem at hand with respect to everybody's needs in the picture.
I want to come back to that a bit later. I want to ask you about Matthew Fox, because in the endorsements to your book, he says that your method of Lorax as the path to flow parallels in many ways the four paths of creation, spirituality, and his work. Could you explain for those who are not familiar with the four paths of creation, spirituality, what he means by that?
Well, I'm trying to reflect on what I remember of his work. You know, I met him synchronistically at a conference and end up speaking to him. And it turns out that we live within a few miles of each other. And so it was a really lovely relationship that was begun that I'm really grateful for. He is a wonderful author and theological leader. I'm not that familiar with those four paths, but I do think that the darkness and the light and the creative aspects that he's speaking about are all reflected in this process of flow. And this is why and synchronicity. This is why I say synchronicity is not just beneficial. I think it's intended to lead us towards experiences that help us grow and heal. And in doing so, it brings us through the full spectrum of our experience of who we are. And so it's not about a spiritual bypass where we're seeking just the positive experiences, but diving deeply into life's experiences and asking, you know, what is this here to help me learn? And the good things that happen can be just as difficult to learn from as the difficult things. And so for me, there's a real sense of compassion and openness that comes from this. Can I read a brief quote from the book?
Sure.
This is about grief. Our grief allows us to let go of what is holding us back from living fully authentic lives. Our sorrow and the outrage that may come with it can light a fire within us. We don't all need to become activists. We don't all need to follow an outward path of political or social change. Rather, allowing those authentic feelings into our hearts can give us the courage to be honest right here in our own lives, in our own homes, in our own places of work or worship. When we authentically feel our emotions, we are no longer willing to let life go by without speaking up into the microphone. We are also no longer willing to let external standards determine who we are. An important first step is allowing ourselves to feel the grief of loss. Whether it's the loss of a relationship with a person we loved, the loss of ecosystems or creatures, or the loss of a profession, a way of life, or an opportunity. When we open to the full range of our experiences, we can also reconnect with our ability to feel joy, to feel gratitude for what we have, and to sense our own power to direct our own lives.
Thank you for that. I want you to talk a little bit more about meaningful history selection. Now, this is an original model that you have developed. How did you come up with that?
Well, for me, it's a real process of flow and synchronicity, and it's in just the development of the work. When I'm diving into try and understand something, I spend time pondering it, looking really deeply and struggling, diving into it, and doing what any theoretical physicist does, which is to start writing models, start writing what I do know already and how does it fit together, what are the open questions in physics that I'm trying to use to the benefit of this theory. A meaningful history selection, in brief, is the process by which the undetermined possibilities out there, any of which could come true, get filtered for the ones that are more likely or more meaningful. The more meaningful ones that connect more to us become more likely as a result of this process. And that's essentially what we call synchronicity, because they're meaningful. They're not just random connections.
Mm. We're going to go to a break now. Skye, we'll be back in a few moments. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and tonight I'm speaking with theoretical physicist, speaker, musician, and author Skye Nelson-Isaacs. We're speaking about his book, Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World. We'll be back with more from Skye Nelson-Isaacs after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Skye Nelson-Isaacs, you say that living in flow can help us address some of the pressing political and social problems we face. Give me some specifics.
Well, I was involved a number of years ago in the Occupy movement that happened around the country, around the United States. And I had an experience that was really interesting and eye-opening to me, which was I found myself facilitating one of the meetings, and I noticed that the meetings tended to be pretty rancorous, like people didn't get along very well. And it didn't start that way, but it was the way that ideas came up. And these are local ideas, like how are we going to manage our meetings? How are we going to show up? Where are we going to meet? That kind of thing. Simple decisions that became very difficult to navigate because people were very passionate and coming from their very, sometimes very entrenched views. And I ended up becoming a facilitator and taking a position of neutrality, but also having my feelings come in. But it helped me develop a sense of flow in coming to solutions that serve everybody, and yet nobody is necessarily nobody is feeling like that's exactly what I wanted. And yet somehow in the end of the conversation, I would look back and say, well, that was my opinion too. And so by listening better to the dialogue that was happening in the group, I experienced, and I think other people experienced, a sense of, oh, I let go of my attachment to what I wanted, and in the end, I did get what I wanted, at least in a way that I didn't even realize was possible before. So through this process of listening carefully to what's happening to other people and to the circumstances, and then opening and reflecting on how, well, maybe there's some way in which this idea that somebody's suggesting actually does meet my needs, and I just can't see it right now. And we have to take time to reflect and not react super fast, because our emotions are designed to have us react really fast. This process has us slow down and recognize our emotions, become very aware of what we're feeling and why, and see those emotional triggers as a healing process for us rather than a reason to react against someone else. And my proposal and my experience is that through a process like that, we actually get to solutions that work for us, but not through the ego. It's through a process of relationship.
I understand that. The most important message in the book, you say, can be summed up in one word, which is feel. Tell me more about that.
The world right now is that we are in a situation, we're in a time in history where we have more emotional awareness than maybe we've ever had in some ways, and yet we're not. I think it's emotions and feelings that are guiding synchronicities. It's us feeling into the future experiences we want to have or the ones we don't want to have and bringing about circumstances which are in alignment with that, and that's what we call synchronicities. And so this is such a complex question around feeling. Feeling is not only guiding the synchronicities in our life, but it's also guiding our responses to things. As I've become more aware of my own emotional responses, like in my family, when I'm relating to my daughter or my wife, I've started to see that every one of my emotional responses can be traced back to something about me, not about the person I'm angry at or upset with or even happy with. It's something in me that's being triggered from my history. And here's the key point. When I can do healing work to understand why I feel the way I do, it frees up a whole spectrum of possibilities in the relationship that I'm in the present, because I'm no longer coming from a reactionary place, but I'm able to choose and feel my emotions. And then let's take it a step further. I mean, right now, the most powerful moments I have is when I'm just immersed in allowing, like I was reading about grief, allowing grief into my heart without collapsing under the weight and allowing that to power me through in what I'm doing. If you think about climate change right now on the planet, I think about my daughter who's 10 and she can't do anything about it really right now, but I can. And to feel the grief of what is happening on our planet with climate change, or to feel the grief of the arguments that are happening between the different political parties in our country and in the United States and in the world, in different countries of the world, to feel that grief instead of responding intellectually and condemning it or condemning other people. I think when we can feel our own emotions, we stop blaming others and stop condemning others and can feel compassion and then can follow a process of flow to come into alignment with each other.
You also say that you can't have flow without problems. What sort of problems?
Well, this example I hinted at earlier when I went to a conference to give a workshop, and I had a very busy day, and I had to drive across the county, and ended up at this workshop, getting ready to lead it, and realized my car wouldn't start. And I was right next to the workshop, so I didn't have to go anywhere, but I did have to deal with my car not working before it got too late in the night. So I noticed in that moment I was also feeling anxious about the workshop. I was feeling anxious about how do I connect with the people that I'm going to be teaching? How do I form bonds with these people that I haven't met before? How do I be really real with them? And my approach intellectually was I'm going to sit down, I'm going to practice my talk, and I'm going to fix my slides. I've got, half an hour now to fix my slides and adjust everything just right so I'm perfect and well put together. But that's coming from a part of me that's trying to be perfectionist. And that comes from some history of, you know, how I learned to respond to the events of my life when I was younger. When my car broke down, what it forced me to do was to open the car door and break the seal around me and get out into the community. And when I did so, I called the AAA person at a road service, and they came and they helped me. And while I was waiting for them to finish their work, a woman came out of her house on the neighborhood and offered if she could help. And I said, no, I've got it covered, thank you, but I'm doing a workshop just down the street if you'd like to join us. And she ended up coming to the workshop. And then I ended up connecting with a friend who was coming to the workshop and having dinner with her and her friends beforehand, which made me feel connected to them. And by the time this workshop actually happened, I had a whole community of like 6 or 7 people that I had just spent time with, and I felt very much connected. So this obstacle of the car breaking down served a purpose that I couldn't see right at first, but helped me address my own anxiety that I was feeling around how to connect with this audience. It showed me the way to solve that problem for myself. Satchitananda used to talk about problems getting in, showing up in our life sometimes to solve other problems. You know, like the car breaking down, showing up to solve the problem I had with how am I going to make this workshop successful. He used to use the analogy that soap is the dirt that you mix with the dirt on your body to get rid of both dirts. I love that picture.
Some people might say in response to that, well, you know, there's the beneficent universe there, which,
yeah,
you know, you seem to take a little bit of an exception to.
I think I would agree with that. I think I would agree with that. I think that it's a, when the point is when we can see that, when we can see the difficulties of our life with the perspective and the spaciousness to wonder, how is this beneficial? I think we do begin to see lots of situations as beneficial that we wouldn't have before. And that brings me, at least, to a place of more gratitude for life. And when I can open up to the feelings of grief that may come when a problem occurs, I can really live in relationship to that and do see it as beneficial and beneficent. I think it's the cosmos. Again, I would say that the point of this process of synchronicity is to heal and grow. And so if we look at life as the goal is to heal and grow, then I do think the universe is looking out for us and trying to make that happen for us. And it's up to us to develop a point of view that is receptive to that. Sometimes it doesn't look how we want it to look.
I think you're absolutely right, but I also think that society, the way it's constructed, especially today, people are very scared, and people seem to want more control, not less control. You know, if we want to open ourselves to flow and synchronicity, we have to let go of control, be open to possibilities. There seems to be a little bit of a conflict there between what is happening in our world and how many of us are responding to that.
Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi talks about flow as the transcending the worry about being in control or not. So it's not necessarily about letting go of control. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's about taking control. It's about living fully in that dynamic and not worrying about which part of that we're in.
Do you think that's an easy thing for most people to do?
It's not easy for me, I'll say that.
No,
it takes
a lot of
practice.
Yeah.
I love the way you brought out that question, because I do think people are very fearful, and there's a lot of reasons. I think there's always a lot of reasons to be fearful. And so the question that I ask is, how do we relate to our fear? How do we respond? Fear is an emotion. How do we treat fear as a healing opportunity? And what I teach in my workshop and in the work I'm doing is to go from fear to authenticity. So I don't really see the opposite of fear as courage necessarily, although that comes in there. But it's being authentic. We can still be afraid in the world, but don't let that get in the way of us being authentic, having real conversations with people even when we're afraid, or having, you know, standing up for things that we care about because they're authentically true for us even when we're afraid to do so. And I think when we come from the point of view of authenticity, that's coming from the heart, which is a whole different source of power for us. I learned in the past few years some deep lessons that I write about in the book about coming from the heart and how that led me to an experience of more authenticity, which helped me not overcome fear, but incorporate it and just live with it in a very different way, in which I didn't actually feel viscerally afraid or afraid of my fear, but just allowed it to integrate in a way that is very empowering for me.
Did you find that more synchronicities occurred because of that?
Yes, and I would say even that I was more able to see them and take advantage of them. I think that boldness is a very useful tool in creating synchronicities. When we step out of the mold, step out into the unknown by taking some kind of bold action. And for us, for one person, it might be just mean raising their hand in a meeting when they've got something to say that goes against the grain. But that boldness, that action might lead to a conversation later in the week where someone says, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I was thinking the same thing. And that might lead, if you look down the road a few months, to a very different path for your company if you're in a business meeting.
Yeah.
And that boldness makes the difference.
It's an allowing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Now, you're developing a self-paced video course based on the concepts in the book. Tell us about some of the things that you'll be sharing in that.
Well, the class is intended to take you from a place of feeling stuck or uncertain or disempowered in your choices and lead you to the ability to see synchronistic gateways, the moments where life is beckoning you in a direction and you have the chance to build momentum towards it and walk through that gateway towards a new level of your well-being. And to do the work you need to do to walk through those gateways and to get to your next level of personal accomplishment. I think that people are struggling to figure out often how to take another step in a direction that gets them where they want to go, and they don't see the next step. And synchronicity and the process of flow gives us tools in order to know viscerally, like, what's the next step or what's a step I can take, and then follow this process of noticing and listening and then know what's the next step after that. So it's a way that the goal of the class is to find your power to change yourself in the ways that you want to change yourself, and then to make change in the world around you because of the sense of enthusiasm and empowerment that you have.
When does the course launch?
Launches in the fall of 2019.
Okay, but people can register for it now.
Yes, it's available for register right now, and we're launching it in the fall. And the course is available for $297 on my website. And it's going to be up there between now and the fall when we actually go live. So I certainly encourage you. People can email me. I'll also be hosting a webinar on July 11th, which people can come to, which is free, through my website, livinginflowbook.com. And that's just an intro into this work and to understand what the course is about if they've got some questions.
I have to say, Sky, that your book was one of the more thought-provoking books and certainly mind-stretching books that I've read in a long time. And I find the whole concept very intriguing because most people, you know, treat synchronicity as, oh, wow, that's interesting, or that's weird, this thing happened to me, and that's as far as they take it. But to actually think that you can encourage, you know, more synchronicities into your life that actually benefit your life and others is very intriguing. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I encourage your listeners to really see the way that synchronicity is showing up in their life each day, and how can they take the next step towards living in the dreams and the hopes that they really want to create in this world and build momentum towards their best selves.
Thank you, Skye. I've really enjoyed speaking with you about this. I'm glad I had the chance to pose some of my questions to you.
Great questions. Thank you for preparing so much.
Well, thanks for being with us tonight, Skye.
My pleasure. I'll see you again soon.
Yes. Living in Flow, The Science of Synchronicity and How Your Choices Shape Your World is published by North Atlantic Books. For more information about Skye Nelson-Isaac, his books, and his soon-to-be-launched Living in Flow video course, visit www.skynelson.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.